Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow.
Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
Hello and welcome to another Absent Minded, and it's me, Patrick Bexell, with a guest that I think I've been asking for about 5 years to get him back on the pod, and he's been asked from you guys to have a repeat performance as well. And I think it was about 5 years ago, David Saint-Louis, that you joined us for a preview of the draft that time. And now I've tricked you into joining me again to look at what Montreal should have as a first overall pick. Thank you, David. It's been great following you and your success all around the Twitter sphere and the Elite Prospect sphere.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. I don't do a lot of podcasts, but I picked my spot. If you ask me for a while, I usually say yes after 5 years. Yeah, that's about the time frame.
Yeah, well, you sit with so much knowledge. Your work is incredible. The whole work of the team of Elite Prospects and the draft guide you have put together that was released this week. Fantastic. It's a treasure, really, to have that. We're going to pick your brains a little bit. And I mean, if you look at Montreal and what's been going through, and there's been rumors about, you know, Slavkovsky, Cooley, Elite Prospects has another person on as second overall. But Shane Wright seems to be the clear first overall pick, right?
Yes, he still is for us. The way we do our ranking is we vote on the top 10 prospects, and every time we did that exercise, Shane Wright came out on top. So he's really our clear number one. There was a time that it was up for debate, but I would say it was more like in November and January. After that, Shane Wright's performance picked up, and there was really no one to challenge him all that much. We discussed other players, like you mentioned, Slavkovsky. We discussed Jiříček a lot in our chat for a while, but then he got injured, so the only one that remained was really Shane Wright for us. And I think we're more sure of this than other athletes. But yeah, I think it's fine to have other candidates for the number one overall spot. And I think others deserve that spot maybe too. But for us, it's pretty clear it's Shane Wright.
What makes Shane Wright the first overall pick?
I think it's just his complete game. He's a center, so there's some bit of positional value, but we don't put too much stock into this. It's really his, in terms of upside and certainty, he has the highest upside and the most certainty in the draft too. So just based on that, it's easy for us to place him at number one. But it's also that even in terms of skill, he beats a lot of other players in the draft too. He's an above average skater and above average handler in terms of projection, for sure. So when I say above average, I really mean that in 5 years, when we look at his skills, it's probably going to be above average in terms of handling, skating. His shot has pretty special mechanics, but it's also above average for me. I think he's going to be a scorer in the NHL. And he has the defensive game, the ability to position himself on the ice offensively too. He really has the complete package. And that special ability that makes him different than others, that off-puck game that many people talk about, he's the best in the draft in it. And by that, I mean, his ability to position himself, but not only defensively. I mean, the ability to anticipate puck rotations, the movement of teammates, movement of opponents, and position himself in a way to support teammates and kill the play of the opposition. His hockey sense received the highest grade in the draft. So in terms of anticipation, processing of the play, and his ability to adapt to pressure when he gets the puck, it's pretty high. So he has the hockey sense and above average skills. That's a pretty safe bet on number one overall. It doesn't mean that he's going to be the best player from this class, but from this class when it comes to revaluing this draft in 5 years. Maybe it's even probable that someone else in the draft is going to come out of nowhere and maybe beat him. But with the information we have now, if we have to make a choice on the first overall pick, I really think it's Shane Wright.
You mentioned someone popping up, and part of that would probably translate as well to Shane Wright starting in NHL next year. He either has to stay in juniors for another year or go to the NHL. He cannot start playing against men, where we see players like Slavkovsky, Jiříček, Nimitz, and Kimmel as an example. We see in the Swedish trio from Djurgården, having had that experience, Marco Kasper, one of my favorites, is also one who's played against men and can continue developing maybe at a little bit lower level. It's for Wright, it's NHL or juniors. That will hamper his development in some ways and might make Slavkovsky, which I think can have a bigger impact faster.
I wouldn't say that's exactly the case. It's hard to predict, but I don't think it matters too much if you have Wright in the NHL next year, just because of his type of game. The only thing that he will really have to learn is the pace of play. So when you probably saw a lot of people talk about Wright's motor and his kind of low-paced play, it was the same thing as Nick Suzuki in his draft year too. That's the only thing he will really have to learn when he gets to the NHL right now, because the rest of his game is pretty NHL ready. He's already playing a type of game that would work in the he was already playing a type of game that would work in the NHL this year. So if he does join the NHL next year, I'm not sure it's going to produce a lot, but I'm not worried about his ability to survive and even drive in some games against maybe weaker formations. The thing with Slavkovsky is that he really thrives when he gets like 20 minutes a night and a lot of puck touches, and he's used as the main forward on the team, the carry forward, and the team revolves around him. And we saw that at a World Championship, but he's not going to get that in the NHL in his first year. Nah. And yeah, I think that's might be a problem for him. He has the physicality. He can play system hockey. He can go in front of the net and wreak havoc and screen for shots. He can play on the boards. He has that kind of skills, and his passing game is good enough that he could figure it out in year one. But he's not as adaptable as Shane Wright, and he doesn't. He's going to need a proper setup for him to succeed. And looking at the Habs team next year, from what we know about it, I'm not sure he's going to get it from the start. So if we think that he might be a pick for Montreal. So I think both players, you can make cases that they would fit the NHL next year. But Wright, it could be a good spot for him, the NHL next year, or he could go back to junior, and you could do that, and it would be good for his development too, because he still needs to work on being the main play creator. So doing a bit of what Slavkovsky does and taking the puck and really taking charge and creating, manipulating, learning to manipulate defenders and create plays for his teammates even better, a bit like Nick Suzuki does. He still has to get better at this. He does it, but not as consistently. And it's something that an extra year in the OHL could really teach him. So I see our arguments for both, honestly.
There are two strong defenders coming out of this draft as well. There's more, but in the top five, you got Nemec and Juricek. Great to see, obviously, Central Europe bringing up some great prospects again. What differentiates these two defenders? And you guys obviously have Juricek as number two as well.
Yes. It was a great debate for all this season. Yeah, and we just flip-flop on them for a while. And then it was Juricek for us for a while. Then he got injured, and the Mets performed really well in the playoffs and at the World Championship. So the debate was back on. Honestly, if Juricek didn't get injured, I don't think it would be close between these two. I'm really a big fan of Juricek, like probably the biggest out there. I had him as my 1B for a while during the season. He was the main contender for me for a while. I'm not sure everyone at EP shared that view, but I really, really liked him. What I like about Juricek is that he reminds me a bit of Marvin Sider in his draft year. He's a bit older than Sider was, and his game is a little bit more refined than Sider was at the same point in time in both their draft years. He's a very physical defender who can play a shutdown game, and he can also move the puck with short passes, move the puck by carrying it, and he has some offensive upside. I hear that he's more of an offensive defenseman. I don't really see that as much for him in the future. I think he's going to put up points, but his game will probably be shutting down the opposition with his physicality, his range, and his pretty good skating overall, and making short passes to teammates, picking up pucks off the walls and moving them quickly to teammates and on regroups, finding the right options. He has offensive skills, but it's really his ability to shut down that I like, and he's very NHL projectable. Right now, the issue with him is really his decision-making. He has some wild sequences where he really tries to do too much. And that reminds me a bit of Simon Edvinson last year. I'm not going too much on a tangent here, but when I evaluate HockeySense, I don't care too much about decision-making as long as a player shows awareness, processing ability, and anticipation. So even if the decisions right now aren't all that great, I see him have some really high flashes of being aware of teammates under pressure, of processing the position of defenders and teammates super quickly and making the right play. So as long as a player has that, I'm confident that the decision-making is going to improve, is going to learn to balance risk and upside of certain play better as he ages. So I think he's going to be an above average thinker of the game in the NHL. And Nemec, Nemec is more of the modern prototype NHL defenseman. So he's really smooth on the ice. His handling skills, his skating skills are clearly above average. He's always moving. He's always activating with his teammates on breakouts, always moving along the blue line in the defensive zone, exchanging with teammates to create plays. He always aims to create, and he's much smoother than Juricek in his skating stride. The hockey sense, I don't think it's as high in terms of projectable thinking as Juricek. I don't see him create advantages for his team as much as Juricek, or he doesn't try it as much. And by that, I mean that he's really good at moving around the ice, but sometimes his moves can lack a bit of purpose. He's just moving to move. And that is going to work super well inside some teams. Like, he's not going to get drafted by Toronto or the Lightning, but these are the types of teams that really install a lot of movements in the offensive zone, and it would be super great inside those formations. But if he's asked to play a more old school type of defense on some blue line to defend really physically and just make simple passes, there's a risk there that Nemec doesn't turn out to be the top four defenseman that everyone hopes. So I like Juricek more for his projectability than Nemec, but I think Nemec has better tools overall than Juricek.
One player that we should really not forget, and one that is making a little bit of a surge up the rankings, in different rankings, is obviously Logan Cooley. Also a center, skilled, but with the ever-present discussion about height. You guys have him as number four. I've seen him as high as number two. Is it only the height that brings him down, or what is it?
I think people overestimate his skill level. And I'm going to say this like this. I think he has above average skills across the board. Again, in terms of projection, some things right now need some refinement. But if you project him in 5 years, I think it's going to be above average compared to an average NHLer. But in terms of skating, there are better skaters than him in the draft too. Like I'm thinking about Lambert, even Frank Nazar is a better skater than him. He skates a bit hunched over. He has some mechanical problems. So I think his skill is going to be good enough for him to play the same kind of playmaking creation role that he has right now, but he's going to hit a ceiling in some aspects in the NHL. He won't be able to do the same thing. Definitely, he won't be able to do the same things he did this season in the USHL. His competition was pretty low, and his support was really great inside that team. So he had a bit of an easy time this season. That being said, he's obviously one of the best, if not the best playmaker in the draft still, in terms of ideas and the highlight reel plays. He scored with a lacrosse goal at some point. Like, he's very creative. And in terms of creativity, I'm not sure many other forwards beat him. There was kind of a season in two parts for him. In the first part of the season, it was really funny because we just projected him as right light. He played the same type of game, like really efficient. He was just connecting simple, not necessarily simple play, but he was just a connector between his teammates' play. He would get the puck, move it quickly, and make evident passes and play, being more involved on the defensive side. What would shine more about his game is his ability to position on the ice and to make the right decisions. And then he went to the World Championship and everything changed. And then the second half of the season, he just became this wild offensive generator that would try every play in the book constantly. And at first I didn't like that about him, but then I realized that this helped him push his skill level to an extra level. So it really added to his game. He became, like I said, more creative. He learned to manipulate defenders a lot better. He's one of the better manipulators one-on-one in this draft. So when you think about his game, I think when he will reach the NHL, it's going to be more of the Logan Cooley of the first half than the second half. So ultimately, I think his type of game will be closer to right than what it is right now in terms of this highly creative player. He will still retain his creativity, but he will become more efficient, better about choosing his plays, better about positioning, and still retain that part of creativity too. So yes, I like Logan Cooley, but there's a lot of dimensions to his projection, a bit more uncertainty because he's a high-level creator who doesn't have elite tools necessarily for me. And he had such a different game in the second half that I'm not sure where he will end up necessarily, but I really like him. I had him also at fourth on my own board.
Leaving the top picks for a bit, but Montreal also has the 26th pick in the draft from Calgary in the Tyler Toffoli trade. If you, and we're just going to like pretend that you can trade to a certain spot or trade for to get the player you want somewhere around between 10 and 20. Who would you take in that gap in order to maybe fill a need for Canadians or a really interesting prospect?
If I could trade up?
Yep.
Okay. I think it depends if the Habs really want to take on a player like Brad Lambert, which I'm not sure because they tend to value character and players who play a greater side of game or active game. I'm not sure he's really their type, but he's the most skilled player in the draft. And if he does end up falling around the 20th spot, it could be one that it's a sound investment at some point in the draft. Sure, he carries more risk, but around the 20th spot, his skating is elite. I work for Elite Prospects, but we rarely use that term, elite, and Brad Lambert is one of the better skaters that we've seen in the past few drafts. Like it's that good in terms of agility, in terms of quickness, in terms of speed. He can beat any defender one-on-one if he just gets a bit of speed. Some parts of his game are not really projectable. Like he needs more space to operate a bit, and decision making, it's a bit problematic at times, but it's a bit like Yerichek. So he has some flashes of anticipation, of really fast processing ability and awareness. So I don't really worry too much about this. It's going to fix itself. If he wants to be if he's open to coaching, and that might be another topic entirely.
Yeah.
But around this spot, he's a pretty good investment. And if Frank Nazar does end up sliding, like many public outlets project him to, he would be, I would try everything in my power to trade up, even to like, if it's around the 15th spot, and it costs a lot to move into the teens. I don't know what it would cost exactly, but I know that past draft tells you that it's a high price. It's still worth it. Like, we have him at fifth overall. We gave him shades of, when we do our draft guides, we do comparables, but it's more shades of, because he's not going to be the exact same player, and everyone understands this. And we compare him to Braden Point. And I think it kind of fits too, because Frank Nazar is a bit of a weird player. He is a smaller player, 5'9", but he plays a really physical inside game. And he's not afraid to cut in front of defenders in the slot to get his stick on pucks. He's really good along the walls. He always finds ways to move the puck that is sitting on the wall to one of his teammates, because he protects it with his body, and he's really good under pressure. And he has that creativity, that playmaking skills. He's a very complete player who really progressed during the year. So in September, we didn't have him as high as we have him now. Like, we thought more of him as a second rounder even. And then he just kept adding to his game, kept improving during the year, and massive improvements. Like, it's really rare what we see this from a prospect. He started a year wanting to dangle everyone, and then he stopped doing that and become a really efficient playmaker in the second half. And that almost never happens. So you see a player that is really progressing, and he was injured in the last part of the year, so he didn't pop up at the U18 tournament as much, but he progressed, and he was still good even when injured, and his game projects very well to the NHL, even arguably more so than Logan Cooley's, who has maybe a higher ceiling, but he has to add more elements to his game to make it NHL-ready. Frank Nazar, if he can become more consistent, he has a lot of NHL elements, so I would try my best to trade up to get him. And there are a bunch of other players. Our board is pretty different from, I think, most NHL ones. Like, players like Kale Odelius, we really like. The Owen Pickering is another player who has a massive upside, but is really far from the NHL right now. He just grew like another 4 inches, I think, in the summer or something like this. And he's very tall, and it affects his coordination. He can't make the plays he wants right now, but if he adds to his frame, he has the top pairing potential. So there are a lot of interesting options in the teens that might even fall all the way to the Hab spot at 26. So might not even need to trade up necessarily.
Speaking about the 26 pick, if you look at your list around that time, I have to scroll here, because obviously I'm watching it at the same time. but who would you take at that point? Because there are a few really interesting players. They are further along. And I'm going to try not to talk about Europeans now, because you know I get all excited and all that with all the Europeans, even the ones from Jurgården, which I don't really like. But there are some interesting picks around this area that could, you know, really go very far. And I think for you guys, you have Gauthier as its heavy lead.
Yeah,
which might actually rise in the class because of his name, because his father,
so?
His father is a former player as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Nah.
Well, yeah, we have at the 26th spot, there was one player that I think is going to be there and perhaps shouldn't miss. It's Owen Beck. We absolutely
Why shouldn't Montreal miss him?
Because so if you draft right at first overall, you kind of get a semi-similar player as right at the 26th spot. So that might not work, because Owen Beck is very similar to Shane Wright. He is another efficient centerman who plays a really sound defensive game with flashes, really high playmaking skills at times, but just not often enough this season. If he just produced more, and if he flashed that playmaking ability more often, he would have risen on our board even more, like in the top 15, top 14, something like this. He's just like such a complete player. His game projects easily to the NHL, and we like this, but he has upside because of those flashes of playmaking. He's a really smart player positionally too, in terms of away from the puck, both offensively and defensively. So just like Wright, he positions himself inside pockets of space. He anticipates the game. He supports plays well. He's very physical. He has smaller skills. He can protect the puck. He can move the puck out of scrums with his body and his passing skills. A lot of NHL tools and a projectable game and upside too. So I think the NHL will be way more interested in him if he just scored at a point per game. He fell a bit below that point per game mark, but it was just inexplicable. Like his point total doesn't reflect his talent, and I'm sure of that.
Interesting. And well, there is this thing with picking another center further down the draft order in the first round, which, yeah, we can see Montreal not going that way. Obviously, and I'm going to stick to European then just because I promised I wouldn't, but Hevelid, I'm not the hugest fan of Hevelid. It might be because of his club affiliations and all that, and his father's club affiliations as well. AIK and Djurgården are like, they're from Stockholm, so obviously the rest of Sweden don't like them. But now, jokes aside, really interesting defender, one of the leaders of that Sweden under 18 team. And what can you say about him?
I really like Hevelid, but I also think we have him a bit high. The issue is that when he came to make our board, it was hard to put other players above him. So it's just an upside pick. Usually at Elite Prospects, we tend to balance like projectability and upside. So we don't just value upside. The reason we have players like Kasper and Ugrin high, it's because they also have projectable games. It's the same for Beck. Those players also have upside, but they have projectable games. In terms of Matthias Hevelid, it's more a pure upside pick because there's a chance he doesn't make the NHL. He's in the offensive zone. He's a blue line shooter. He just fires pucks after pucks on that all the time. But what really impressed me about him down the stretch, and it's the same thing for Jimmy Hamrin, our Swedish scout, it's his puck moving ability. At the World Championship under 18, he was really good with moving pucks off the back wall to teammates. He was capable of holding forechecking pressure, so he was capable of evading it and finding teammates in open ice. He would hold the puck an extra second to let teammates create a bit more space for themselves, and then he would feed them the puck. He was real great about using his back end to seem really comfortable with that facet of his blade, and it's not the case for all the defensemen in his draft. His handling skills are really high in terms of technique. Like, his technique is perfect. We project him as a puck mover who is going to have some struggles on the defensive side, although for a small defenseman, he's pretty good at leveraging his weight along the boards. Like, he can pin opposing players, he can get under them. It's just off puck. Sometimes he misses attackers running behind him. He's not as engaged sometimes. So he's an offensive defenseman with a lot of puck moving upside who skates well enough. He's not like an elite skater, but we gave him like a 5 or 6 grade, which means average to above average, who can leverage his weight and move the puck. There's a lot of upside elements in all of that. So we really like him. He's just a bit more uncertain than other players.
So who are, like, looking into the second round and third round, who are your favorite players? And could you give us a pick that you think is a steal down that road?
Yes, definitely. Even at the 26th pick, like, there are players that are going to fall that are pure upside, like Jager Furkus, who's a 149 pounds, 5'9", really great shooter.
Montreal already have one of those?
But he's a bit bigger than Caulfield, if you're thinking of him. He has some playmaking elements too. It's just that he's probably further in his maturing and physical development than other players in this draft. So he's a high upside pick, and he might fall to the second round. Danila Yurov, he's a Russian, so because of the Russian factor that we won't get into, but you probably understand, he's going to fall probably in the second round. Noah Oslin, who's kind of a shifty rusher with the puck. He's a bit like Lambert in some aspects, but he's also a really smart player, and he's just very, very light too. He doesn't have a physical or inside game. He's more of a player who sticks on the periphery right now, but when he adds weight, maybe his game changes because he's also pretty great at supporting the play. He can beat defenders one-on-one between blue lines and get the puck in the offensive zone. He's a pretty good playmaker too. There's upside there. My one player was really like maybe hidden from most other most other lists is Hunter Hight, who's an OHLer who didn't score, a bit like Owen Beck, but he flashed some insane skill this season. He had some of the best sequences we've seen from a draft-eligible player, and I think he had like maybe 40 or 45 points, maybe more. I don't really remember his point totals, but he didn't get close to the point per game mark that we usually like for a draft-eligible player. And somewhere in the second round, this guy could really explode next year. He's pretty good defensively. Offensively, he's good at supporting the play, but it's really his playmaking skills. He can manipulate defenders, deceive them, and he had some really slick passes this season. Again, it comes down to consistency. We just didn't see it enough to really put him in the first round. And we already have him pretty high at like 34, I think, for a player that is more projected to be a bit lower in the draft. But he's really a secret, I think, at the NHL draft. Someone you should bet on.
He's not a secret anymore because, David, your work and your insight and the way you're describing the skills of these players, it makes us all, you know, just want to learn more, and it's great to hear you going. I know we have, and I'm going to go into this European stuff again. I'm sorry for every listener that is bothered about me, but you and I have a little bit of a different opinion about Liam Bichel.
Oh yeah,
because I think he's just a big guy that hits everything he can, and there has been some really dirty plays from him over the last season. I know you like him a lot more.
Yeah, I call those nice plays, in fact. It really depends on what you value. Like, this is a player who I think we see the same exact player. It's just in terms of projecting him. You don't like him as much because probably of those plays and the decision making. Sometimes the puck skills aren't all that great. They're average. Like, you make some nice plays, especially on breakouts in the offensive zone. You can complement plays, support plays, and he can make some simple passes, I would say, but also some nicer passes through the defensive layers. He can hit teammates sometimes in the slot in the offensive zone. So he has those flashes, but mostly he's a big guy who defends, and he defends really violently with more than an edge. Like, it's dangerous, I would say, even. But NHL coaches are going to love that. And
I can see that people love him. I just think his decision making, as you mentioned, or hockey IQ, whatever we're gonna drag into all this thing, it's limited. I was gonna say limited, but not very high. Fine.
Yeah, we gave it a 5, I think, and our scale is like 1 to 9, and 5 is average. But I could see like a below average grade slightly. The question is, will it matter too much if his decisions aren't all that great? If he just follows the system and he makes simple passes when he has teammates open, and he just rims the puck on breakouts when no one is open, and he just does that safely and relatively smartly, as long as he plays his shutdown game. Well, let's talk about it a bit. Like, Bichel has projectable average skating ability, and he's 6'4", I think, 6'5".
Yeah.
He has a really long reach too, and he's very physical, so he can cover a lot of ice. Yeah, just with his presence, I can guarantee you that attackers was going to want to move to the other side of the ice, not face him directly, because there's a chance they might get hurt if they choose his side of the ice to attack. So just that presence and the fact that he's really engaged too. He's just he's not a player who just likes to hit and will get himself out of position to hit all the time. He does it a bit right now, but I think this will go away in this game. He's going to be smarter about his decisions, when to use his stick and when to use his frame. And the fact that he cares so much about his defensive game and that he's already so good at it for such a young player in the SHL. If he gets good enough in his shutdown game, it's going to reflect on the possession stats like a Corsi and all of this, because he's going to break plays really fast, and it's going to allow his teammates to get on the attack after that. So that's my view of Bichel, but I can understand the other argument that maybe his puck plays are not going to develop sufficiently for him to be a good enough offensive driver in the NHL, and it's just going to hurt his team. And maybe his upside is limited to a bottom pairing role, a number 6 role. I see him more as a 4, 5, 6 projection, And but just the fact that he's so close to the NHL already in terms of some facet of his game, that's why we have him in the first round. But again, we value upside, but also certainty and projection. We balance those two.
And also, it's something that, you know, a lot of people don't really know about. And we talk about it on Eyes on the Prize, and you and I speak about it all the time, I think. But since I can see him going in the first round. I don't think he should be there, but I can see him going in the first round.
He's going top 20. He's going top 20, I think.
That might be too high, but I'm
pretty sure.
I won't bet against it, David. I would definitely not bet against you. But he can be placed in the AHL as well. Because he's a first rounder. And that makes him a very interesting pick, because I would say either you take him in the first round to do just that, or he's going to fall further down into mid second round, because then he will have to play in Sweden for the next 2 years. I think he has a 2-year contract. I'm not sure, but at least for next season, he will be in Sweden. And that might, Leksand is a really good team. Heinemann, obviously, that Montreal just signed, comes from there. But it also limits maybe that progression that you would want to see in a player like Bichel to adjust into the North American game.
Yes, and he has a game that's more tailored to North American heights, because attackers have less space to escape along the boards on the smaller ice. So maybe it would just be better in the AHL. One way or another, I think he's going to find his way to the NHL. I wouldn't bet against that. It's just the upside. I don't know what role he's going to find. Sorry.
No, not at all. And I love the fact to hear and challenge each other's ideas. So I'm all for that. You're a scout, obviously, for the prospect for the Q. Which player out of the Q would you really consider this time? Because we haven't really spoken about any player out of the Q, and it is the backyard of Montreal really now, with Trois-Rivières there as well.
Yes, I wasn't a big fan of the Q this year. We had Nathan Gaucher, a bit too low at the start of the year, and now he's at 25 for us, which is a good spot for him. So with the second first round pick of Montreal, he's a really good target too. But I think he's going in the top 20 to some team, not sure who, but he has a lot of he's very projectable. Again, you know, the upside, maybe he's more of a third liner or middle six guy. But he has the physicality, the above average skating, and the above average size. And he can make some really nice passing plays. Again, I'll always come back to small area skills, the ability to get the puck out of pressure, out of scrums to teammates. And he's really good at that too. And he can work the front of net, work the boards. He has those skills. He's an easy player to project. So that gives him a lot of value to NHL teams. So I think he's going to be gone by the time Montreal pick at 26. There's a player that I think might fall. I've been predicting that. I'm not sure, but Tristan Luneau really didn't have a good season in terms of showing his upside to NHL teams. I think he focused mostly on defense this season, because last year he had some really nice flashes of offensive ability. He's very agile as a defenseman. He can take pucks in movements and walk the blue line. He can use those 10-2 or heel-to-heel moves against approaching defenders or forecheckers and beat them with a fake and a weight shift and move around them. He's really good at this, but he's a lot more effective when he already has speed. His quickness and his straight line speed to catch up to opponents or beat them of the rush, they're not great right now. We gave his skating a below average mark, even though he's super agile, because he's pretty, not heavy on his skates, but he doesn't have those light feet that we like from moving defenseman. And on breakouts, he wasn't really good this season either. He's really good when he has his options in front of him. So on regroups, when the puck moves out of the offensive zone and he has to get his team back in the offensive zone and can make those passes, he's really good when he has options there. Same thing at the point in the offensive zone, when he can see his teammates where they're moving. He's good at creating lanes to them and hitting them really fast. But when he has his back turn and he has to retrieve a puck, his game was not very efficient this season. He had trouble evading pressure, again, because of the skating, but also a bit of a lack of awareness. Those things are fixable, but it's just because of that, his game carries a little more risk than other players. So I think maybe he falls to the end of the second round. That's possible. And there's Maverick Lamoureux, who I really, really like. He's one of my favorite players in the draft. We have him at the end of the second round on our board because, again, his game is pretty uncertain. He's a 6'7" or 6'8" defenseman. I'm not sure anymore. 6'6". He's a really, really big guy who's very, just like Owen Pickering, he grew a lot over the past year still. So it was hard for him this season to find his footing and handle the puck as smoothly as he did last year. There were still the same flashes of playmaking ability, of being able to beat opponents one-on-one. And he's very physical and even mean defender in his zone. Like he knows how to use his size and he's not afraid to use a stick on the back of on the back of players to gain the puck back. So he has some mean elements. He can move the puck and he has some manipulation abilities one-on-one. But those are only flashes. His game is really, really far from the NHL right now. He has awareness problems. The puck tends to get away from him a bit. His defensive footwork, sometimes he really commits on defense. So he was going to rush at a player who has the puck, but he leaves someone else behind. So you have to work with him both on the reads, both with and without the puck, and on the technical ability. But just like other players, he's probably further in his physical development than a player like Nathan Gaucher, who is almost fully developed already. So add a few pounds to his frame, more time to really settle into his final form, like get adjusted to his height and initial development, and he might turn into a top four defenseman. It's possible. It's just more of a long shot than other defensemen in this draft. And there's someone that I can talk about that I know you guys really like at Eyes on the Prize, and it's Jordan Dumais. I think he's from English roots, so that might be more appropriate. But
let's not tell Matt that.
We have him. I'm not sure. I'd have to check on his Elite Prospects page, you know, where he was born. But anyway, we understand who we're talking about. He's a small forward, 5'9", who's not a great skater, but who's really smart. We talk about Wright's ability to position away from the puck, and Dumais has a bit of the same ability, maybe to a lesser extent slightly, but it's close still. He can link plays together because he's positioned inside space. He arrives at the right time. He can support plays very well. And his passing game is pretty advanced too. So he can move the puck quickly, but also hold it to create passing lanes to teammates. He can deceive defenders. So he has the playmaking element and the off-puck moving ability. So the hockey sense is pretty high. It's just that will he be able to play his game in the NHL as it is? The answer is absolutely no. He's not a projectable player right now, but he's scoring a lot. And that always hides some things that we might not understand about his game, that maybe he's a more projectable guy than I give him credit for right now, but there are enough smartness, enough hockey sense, and enough passing skills and ability to support position and enough energy in his game that he could take those abilities and build on it to create an NHL game. But right now he's really far from that. So he's more of a third round bat for me, but a really good one and a really fun player to watch too. I really like watching him this year.
You've been listening to former Eyes on the Prize contributor and alumnum, David Saint-Louis. You find him at David_ST_Louis on Twitter. You find him at Elite Prospects. David, it's been fabulous to have you on again. I hope I don't have to wait another 5 years to get you on, though. I know directly we post this, people are going to ask for you when you've been on next time, but I'll give it a year, and hopefully you'll accept it at that point.
It can be a shorter span of time. I'm getting more comfortable doing podcasts. Like I used to not be very comfortable at them. Now, after doing more of them, I feel more comfortable, and I like doing those. So yeah, I should be back in a shorter span of time.
We're looking forward to have you on, David. Again, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. We appreciate it enormously. I know the listeners and the readers will appreciate it as well. I hope that you take a check on Elite Prospects and
see if you can buy the guide. It's worth it. It's going to take about 5 years to get through it, but it's so comprehensive and so well a foundation for everything that makes you understand hockey in a different way. Really, really great. Thank you again, David, and best wishes for the weekend.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.